Genesis chapter 4 is where we are today. Genesis chapter 4. Probably not the typical text one would think you would preach on the day of a baptism. But don't worry, there's hope in here. There's hope to be had. So hang in there, Hattie. We'll get there. Genesis chapter 4, verses 1 through 16. And then I will put in verse 25 as well. Let us give careful attention to the reading of God's holy word as you have done twice before. Adam had relations with his wife Eve, and she conceived and gave birth to Cain, and said, "I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord." Then she gave birth again to his brother Abel. And Abel was a keeper of flocks, but Cain was a tiller of the ground. In the course of time, Cain brought an offering to the Lord of the fruit of the ground. Abel also brought the firstborn of his flock and of their fat portions. And the Lord had respect for Abel and for his offering. But for Cain and for his offering, he did not have respect. And Cain was very angry, and his countenance fell. The Lord said to Cain, "Why are you angry? Why is your countenance fallen? If you do well, shall you not be accepted? But if you do not do well, sin is crouching at the door. It desires to dominate you, but you must rule over it." Cain told Abel, his brother, and it came about when they were in the field that Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. The Lord said to Cain, "Where is Abel, your brother?" He said, "I do not know. Am I my brother's keeper?" And then he said, "What have you done? The voice of your brother's blood is crying out to me from the ground. Now you are cursed from the ground, which opened its mouth to receive your brother's blood from your hand. From now on, when you till the ground, it will not yield for you its best. You will be a fugitive and a wanderer on the earth." Then Cain said to the Lord, "My punishment is more than I can bear. You have driven me out this day from the face of the earth, and from your face will I be hidden. And I will be a fugitive and a vagabond in the earth. And it will happen that anyone who finds me will kill me." So the Lord said to him, "Therefore, whoever kills Cain, vengeance will be taken on him sevenfold." Then the Lord put a mark upon Cain so that no one finding him would kill him. Then Cain went out from the presence of the Lord and settled in the land of Nod, east of Eden. Verse 25, Adam had relations with his wife again, and she had another son and called his name Seth. For she said, "God has granted me another offspring instead of Abel, because Cain killed him." The grass withers and the flower fades, but the word of our God stands forever. Well, just a couple weeks ago, as we prepared to baptize little Ray, probably one of the more peaceful baptisms I've had in my time, we reminded ourselves of the vows that we take when we bring our children to be baptized. And today we remind ourselves again why we must take those vows We remind ourselves of the reality in which we live and how it impacts not only us, but also our children. We remind ourselves of the outcome of life when the gospel is not heard and heeded. And I want to encourage you that while the pain of the curse carries on in our children, so does the hope of the gospel. With each generation, the reality of the curse of sin upon humanity is realized again and again. But so is the hope and the promise of the gospel. That God's promise is to us and to our children. Firstly, in this text, we are reminded of the promise. The promise. Adam had relations with his wife Eve, and she conceived, gave birth to Cain, and said, I have gotten a man with the help of the Lord. Now, we've touched on this text many times before, that the Hebrew there is more truncated. The English translations try to fill it out a bit so that it can make a little bit of sense to our Western ears. But the Hebrew says, I have gotten a man, the Lord. This is Eve's proclamation that she believes God is going to fulfill His word. His word to the enemy that the seed of the woman would trample the head of the serpent. She believed that the first child born would fulfill the promise. She did not realize that generations would come and go before that promised Redeemer would come. And yet she had hope. She believed the promise. And parents, we are called upon to believe the promise. We come in faith, baptizing our children, trusting that the outward sign will become an inner reality. That even as they are washed with the water physically, they will be washed with the Spirit and the Word spiritually. That even as their bodies, in a sense, are cleansed from filthiness on the outside, I've yet to have anyone ever bring a filthy baby up to be baptized. We like them to be nice and sparkling clean and in the cute, nice outfits. But even as they're washed from filthiness on the outside, that soon the Lord would wash them from their filthiness on the inside. We must believe the promise. Secondly, we see the pitfall. We see the pitfall. We see the reality that when you put one sinner in a room by himself, you have enough problems. But if you put two sinners in the room, you've got more than enough problems. It doesn't just double, it becomes exponential, the amount of conflict and strife that you can have. And the Lord tells Cain that sin is crouching at the door. This speaks to the predatory nature of sin. Many times we treat our sin as if it's the family pet. We like to put it on a leash and walk it around the block. We like to feed it. We like to make sure it has water. We give it treats sometimes. And then we're shocked when we wake up one morning and it's a massive beast that consumes us. The pitfall is real. That if we do not guard ourselves, sin is crouching at the door. And it will attack. It's not confident with just a little bit of us. As the CEO of Netflix recently stated, asked, who's your greatest competitor? And if you are into online streaming, you might think well, Amazon Prime or Hulu or one of these other services. And this is what the CEO said. He said, our greatest competitor is sleep. People still sleep. And we need to cut into that market share. See, they're not just content for you to watch a half hour or hour show. They're not even content with you binge watching. And if you don't know what binge watching is, you're better for it. Don't worry about it. It wants to consume you. It wants every waking moment of your time. It wants your very life. It wants your soul. While that in some level is true of Netflix and Amazon Prime and Hulu, is definitely true of your sin. It wants to eat you alive. It's interesting here. We think Abel was a keeper of flocks, and in our day and age, that makes sense. But at this point, Abel was keeping flocks just to keep flocks. People didn't eat meat. And so didn't Cain have the more important job? Shouldn't the fruits and vegetables that Cain brought be even more acceptable? Because he was actually working to provide for the rest of the family and to provide for humanity. Wasn't that good enough? This reminds us again of the pitfall of not listening to what God says is important. Not listening to what God says is required. Of turning away from being impressed with what I do and being impressed with what God does, even when what God does not make sense. And Cain fell for this. He did not follow the example and command of the Lord to sacrifice bloody animals for sin. And while we live in the day and age where people go out in the woods and mourn for the trees that they can hear crying and wailing as they are cut down, and people, you know, think carrots have souls and all of this stuff, there's no blood. You can't squeeze blood from a turnip. Thank you. You will not be struck dead for answering a question. It's okay. There is no blood in vegetables. There's blood in animals. Abel brought the acceptable sacrifice, which probably points to the heart of the matter, which is the matter of the heart, that Abel believed the promise too. And he trusted the Lord, and Cain did not. Thirdly, we see the plot as it unfolds. Cain told Abel, his brother, and it came about when they were in the field that Cain rose up against his brother Abel and killed him. And some ancient sources point to the espionage that was going on, the casualness with which Cain approached Abel. Oh, come on, let's go for a walk together. Cain killed him. We don't know how immediate this next conversation took place, but shall we say Cain was caught red-handed. Given the opportunity to confess, he chose to hide in his sin. I mean, this is better than a mystery novel. This is better than a movie. You have the murderer. You have the violator of the law hiding, thinking that he has covered up this sin. And yet the voice of Abel's blood cried out to the Lord. And Cain is further cursed. Now, it's interesting as we consider the law of God, the Ten Commands, in light of this unfolding of the plot between Cain and Abel, we see the vast majority of them violated by Cain. We're reminded that part of the plot is that sins generally don't travel alone. They usually don't even travel in pairs. They might travel single file to hide their numbers, but they always travel in groups. Rarely do you find one alone without another close behind. We see this particularly in the sin of David and Bathsheba, where all 10 of God's commands were violated in that sinful escapade. And it's not a whole lot different here with Cain versus Abel. That Cain clearly does not submit to God as the God. He chooses to worship God in a way that Cain prescribes rather than God prescribes. He was taking the name of his God in vain. He was not honoring his father and his mother by sacrificing as they had taught them to sacrifice. He clearly shoved aside the command to not murder. He bore false witness. He coveted. Cain's sin was not singular. It came in a pack. It came in a group. And remember that. Remember that particularly, young people. When you think, I'll just do this one thing. I'll keep everything else in order. I'll keep everything else in line. But I'll just have this one sin over here on the side. It reminds me of one of my favorite missionaries from my dad's church growing up who was a missionary to Haiti, and only he was from the deep south, so he was a missionary to Haiti. And he used to show pictures of the church buildings they were putting up, and it had the rebar in a grid over the windows, and he'd say, that's to keep the mosquitoes out. And he said, actually, I'm just joking. There's not a single mosquito in all of Haiti. They're all married and have very large families. Sin is not single. Sin is married and has lots of kids. And when you think, I'll just let this one sin come and live with me, understand its spouse will come and all of its kids will come with it. And it won't just show up as a friendly bystander to your life. It won't just wait in the wings until you're ready to go spend time with it. It will be that friend that keeps calling, keeps texting, keeps messaging, keeps posting on your Facebook wall. It's there. It will consume you. It will consume you. That is the plot of sin in anyone's life, if left unconfronted and unfought against. It's interesting here as well to notice the similarity to chapter 3 when mom and dad experienced the curse. The curse from the ground, the earth will not yield its strength, and becoming fugitives and wanderers. They were cursed, but Cain was really cursed, as he was even separated out from the wanderers to be the one who really wandered the face of the earth. This is the plot of sin. And you can imagine for Adam and Eve as they watched this unfold in the lives of their boys, the pain that it was for them as parents to understand what we did has brought this about. In that sense, it is not their fault, it is our fault. And all who have proceeded by natural generation are born guilty of sin. Are born in the sin of Adam and Eve. And you might say, wait, but that's not fair. I need to be given my own chance. Well, guess what? You are. And at every turn, you prove that you are guilty of that sin. Sinners gonna sin. And so there might be a moment of despair here for Adam and Eve as they see not only the multiplication of people, but seemingly the multiplication of sin. We didn't have in mind when we ate that fruit, we wanted something good. We wanted to be wise. We wanted to know more. We wanted to experience more. We didn't have in mind when we did that, that our son would murder our other son. That's not what we had in mind at all. Will the curse overcome us? Is the promise dead? God promised that the seed of the woman would crush the head of the serpent. And God gave us two offspring. And the wicked one killed the righteous one. Well, fourthly, we see the promise again. But we see it in earth and in heaven this time. Seeing it on earth in verse 25 of chapter 4. Adam had relations with his wife again. And she had another son and called his name Seth. For she said, God has granted me another offspring instead of Abel because Cain killed him. In Eve's mind, God showed up again. He gave another offspring. He gave another seed to replace the one who had fallen. To Adam and Eve, the promise was alive and well on earth. Now what of heaven? Think of this. Abel was the first redeemed human soul to enter heaven's gates. To know the blessedness of full redemption, to experience full acceptance by the Father due to the ministry of His mediator. Though hearts were broken on earth, God's promise was not broken in heaven. For Abel, in that moment, when perhaps his skull was crushed by his brother, Christ crushed the head of the serpent, and sin did not overcome Abel. The gospel did. The gospel did. He will do the same for us and for our children. Some of you know the pain and loss of discovering that you're going to have a child and then discovering you're not going to have a child. There are those who even bring that baby to full term and find in the final moments of pregnancy, as some dear friends of ours in Sterling, that the Lord has chosen to take the life of that little one. There are those who have given birth to that child strong, healthy, and alive. Well, there are some even like little Minsoul Yang up in Grand Rapids. Little son of Namshik and Un Yang, our associate pastor from Los Angeles, who's working on his THM at Puritan Seminary, who was born with about half of a heart. I mean that physically, not relationally. And doctors have done the procedures that they believe they can do, but they don't know how long he's going to live. This Wednesday, little Minsoul will be baptized in faith. Not just that God can heal him and sustain his life and blow the minds of all the doctors in Grand Rapids, but in faith that the promise is not just for Namshik and Un, but it's for Minsoul as well. There are some who give birth to strong, healthy children and walk in one morning and find that child gone. There are some who watch them grow to teenage years, as other dear friends of ours in Indiana, and find out that that car went off the road and their child is gone now. The pain and the reality of the curse in the lives of our children is real. We cannot and we must not deny it. That sin and death crouch at the door and they want to consume us. But understand, the promise holds true. The promise holds true. The promise that saved Abel, even when his brother murdered him. No matter how wicked and vile the world, the flesh, and the devil, it cannot thwart the saving of God's elect. So let us hope. Let us hope as we live in the pain that the curse carries on in us and our children. Let us live in the hope of the gospel. That God is saving a people for himself. Even our children. Stand with me as we pray.